Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, some retail changes for the D23 Expo. Magic key holders could have an easier way to get reservations.
More electrical parade merchandise, new flower displays in downtown Disney. We talked to VIP tour guest Kavehi and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Hello, everyone. Welcome aboard the DL Weekly podcast. Please lower your head and watch your step while boarding. If this is your first time listening, we hope you'll check out our website at dlweekly.net. If you have more time to spend, becoming an official weekly tier at dlweekly.net/support is an especially good value. Thanks for traveling with us today, and we hope you have a happy and memorable listen to this week's episode.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of June 22nd, 2022. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Tag Bushman. We want to send a shout out, a big thank you to Nathan R. and Carrie W. for becoming official weekly tiers on our Patreon. Our supporters get some pretty fun perks like DL Weekly swag, bonus content, and access to our Discord community. If you'd like some more Disney magic in your day, head on over to dlweekly.net/support to join the community.
Well, back in episode 222, we spoke with Debbie and Steve from Designer Park Company about their brand new rope drop bag. If you have been wanting to get one of these park goer bags for yourself, you can use our promo DL Weekly to get 10% off your purchase at designerparkco.com. They just released new colors, so not only are they brand new bags, they've already sold through their first shipment and they've got new colors. I'm trying to remember what there is. There's a light blue, a mint green, hot pink. Anyways, new colors, very exciting, very excited for them. Go check it out. Again, that's designerparkco.com, and be sure to use DL Weekly for 10% off your purchase.
Now let's get to the news.
The D23 Expo is getting a new immersive retail experience called the Expo Marketplace. The 27,000-foot space will include everything from limited-time merch to first-time items celebrating 100 years of Disney. You'll find pins, t-shirts, hats, books, plush toys, and so much more. Some of these spaces will require a virtual queue boarding pass. More details on a reservation system will come out later this summer, and if you're not able to attend, some of these items will also make it to Shop Disney Store.
I feel like you and I might be really happy by this. Mickey's of Glendale, it looks like they're splitting it up into three different spaces instead of just having one. So there's going to be the Mickey's of Glendale main store, which is going to feature merchandise designed by Imagineers, which will have hats and t-shirts and all that stuff. And it'll also have collections celebrating Imagineering's upcoming 70th anniversary. Then there's going to be a Mickey's of Glendale pin store, which will have limited edition pins. And then there will be a D23 Expo shop X Mickey's of Glendale's. I'm not sure how to say the way they're naming this, but this will have all of the official D23 Expo 2022 merchandise. So I like the fact, because that line was always massive.
Oh, yeah. We might have to take the plunge and actually wait it out this year. Last year, we started in the line and it did not move for like 20 minutes. So we bailed because we're like, oh man, this is taking too long. The fact that we had it, we were way at the back and it wasn't even moving. We're like, no, we can't quote unquote afford to spend this much time in this line, not even knowing what it is that we're gonna really, what we're in line for. It's a store that we don't know what is even available, and so we bounced. But we might have to.
It was Mickey's of Glendale, Teresa. So we should have just waited.
I know. Well, part of me, right? Mickey's of Glendale is like such a cool, like something that us normal Disney fans really don't get to experience. It's not like, I don't know what to compare it to, because it's not like Club 3. This is something that's very, like, I feel even more, like, exclusive, because it's, you know, the Imagineering store. So I feel like going to the actual location is more the big Disney bucket list item for me than just being able to shop the stuff. It's like being there more.
Sure.
So, if that makes sense.
I mean, it was very popular.
Oh yeah.
And so I'm hoping that because there'll be three different stores that the line will be cut in thirds. I'm sure it won't, but I feel like it'll be nice to have it spread out a little
bit.
It's
hard to say.
Yeah, it is hard to say, but we'll have to see. Well, there's some hope that Magic Key holders won't have to keep refreshing the availability calendar for days to open up. Over in Disneyland Paris, they launched a waiting list for their annual pass holders. With the new option, Magic Key holders put themselves on a waiting list for any day that may appear unavailable. If the day opens up, those on top of the waiting list are automatically giving a reservation for that day. This is currently only available at the Paris Park, but that's also where the Lightning Lane started before coming to the United States, which definitely helps fuel some speculation.
Don't come after me.
Uh-oh.
I'm not sure how I feel about this. I think it sounds really good in concept, but part of our problem right now, I feel, dining reservations, park reservations, anything that requires a reservation when it comes to Disney, is people just kind of hop on them and hold them, which then makes days go out faster. And so I don't necessarily know if this is going to be beneficial or if it's just going to actually, like, worsen the problem.
Sure.
Because nothing drives me more nuts than dining reservations, especially because they're impossible. It feels like they're impossible to get, and I think it's because everybody kind of, like, panics and just grabs any and all dining reservations that they can possibly grab, and I feel that might be some of our issue with park reservations. And, you know, if you, in both things, you don't get a ding on it until kind of the last minute if you cancel. So, I don't know. It's just hard to say. It sounds good, but it worries me.
Yeah, I feel like they need to do... I think the main thing with park reservations is that they need to find some way, and I obviously don't know what that is, but they need to find some way that deters panic possibility reservations where people are like, I might go on this day, so I'm going to reserve it, and then they cancel it last minute or whatever. I feel like maybe there should be some type of thing where if you over 50% of the reservations you request you cancel, you should be put like on a timeout or something. I don't know, maybe. Like I said, I don't know what the answer is. Sure. But I feel like that is causing the problem. And then what ends up happening is you end up getting, like we did when we were there in May, where you were like, guess what? It's 11:50 and there's a reservation for tomorrow now. Well, people that are traveling like us from out of the area can't go and just hope that at 11:50 every night, we're going to have a reservation for the next day.
Well,
so,
and I think that even if you're local, that's got to be very frustrating too, to not be able to, I'm a planner. So to not be able to know, like today, as we record this, to not know, like, to want to go to Disneyland this weekend, but not know if I can get in or not. I'd like to be in that kind of limbo of, do I plan something else? Do I just, you know, that kind of thing.
What if
it's tough.
What if they, okay, go with me on this really complicated system.
Oh boy.
What if, and for dining reservations, what if they do a wait list, okay? And then they keep track of everybody's pass, which they already do, and they say, okay, Teresa Urban, every time she requests a day, or every time that she is able to get a reservation, she doesn't cancel it. So she gets priority when she's requesting a day.
Oh boy, you're opening
a can of worms. And people that are constantly getting days and then canceling and getting days and canceling, those people get moved like further down the priority list.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I feel like that opens a can of worms too.
Or maybe we just get rid of reservations and go back to how it was before. Who knows?
I don't know.
They also said, I read an article somewhere and I don't remember where it was, but I read it this last week that said, oh, it wasn't an article. It was a forum post because somebody was talking about reservations and all that stuff. But they were talking about Disney World. But they were saying that what Disney is doing right now is there's, you know, supply and demand, right?
Oh,
so like people all want to go to Disneyland, whatever. People want to go to Disney World.
They've hiked their demand.
So what they
have little supply.
So what they do is they want Magic Key holders to be the fill-in
when
they haven't reached capacity for day tickets or week tickets or whatever.
Yep.
So key holders think that they're priority. Mm-hmm. Disney thinks key holders are fill-ins.
Yep.
And so it's crazy like that. So we'll have to see how it goes.
You know, I'm okay with being a key holder. I get it. Disney, you know, a key holder that's fill-in because... Again, we don't have... This is so off-tangent. This would be good to include in the bonus episode.
Oh, Lord.
This month. Because it makes sense, right? Because I physically cannot spend the same amount of money that a family that's vacationing there once every other year, we'll say. They do one trip every other year. They spend in that one trip what I'm going to spend in the 2 years worth of trips that we do, which we're going to say is like, for argument's sake, six, you know, spread out over six trips. So obviously, they're much more money dense, those travelers. Sure. So I get it, but yeah. Anyways.
Interesting.
Guests that have seen the recently reopened World of Color and Fantasmic Nighttime Entertainment may have noticed some updates. We sure did with World of Color. For World of Color, some elements were updated since parts to repair them were no longer available. From new 4K projectors to brighter lights on the Incredicoaster, the show looks amazing. Fantasmic also received an extensive refurbishment to the entire show, which received some tech upgrades back in 2017.
Yeah, so the Orange County Register talked to one of the entertainment folks, and they talked about some of the stuff that they had to do. It was kind of interesting because they were talking about Fantasmic and World of Color, but mostly World of Color just got a ton of I mean, we saw that. I mean, they rebuilt the projection housings. We saw it ourselves. The projections looked amazing. So they did just a ton of upgrades.
I mean, how long was the lagoon dry for?
Right.
You know, they did just a ton of work. The thing that's crazy, though, is I feel like they had just had a bunch of issues pre-shutdown and had done an extensive refurb on World of Color. And according to this article from the Orange County Register, the people at Disney basically said, oh, yep, no, we needed to upgrade because the equipment was at the end of its life. So it's like, holy buckets, they're going to have to be... So this is just going to be a constant thing. Every whatever it was, 3-4 years, they're going to have to do this major, major rehaul on this thing, which I'm sure is because all of this equipment is submerged and in water and exposed to all, you know, all of that. So it's just crazy.
Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, we think about how much it costs to put the shows on nightly or whatever, but it also is expensive because you have to constantly be upgrading stuff. And, you know, World of Color has been around for a while now. So, like, the fact that they got as long as they did out of it without replacing a bunch of stuff is kind of amazing. And they would have had to do this no matter what, because, like they said, they can't get replacement parts for some of these things. So, like, it was going to come no matter what. Well, there has been a lot of merchandise already on sale for the 50th anniversary of the Main Street Electrical Parade, but some new items have hit the shelves. First up is a 50th anniversary pin for $20, which features the Mickey drum float from the start of the parade with a 6/17/2022 date on the side. There's also a t-shirt for $39.99 that features Elliot and spelled out June 17th, 2022 written out. A mug is also on sale for $19.99.
So the thing that's so special about this 50th merchandise is that it was released for the actual anniversary, for the actual day of. So it's, you know, June 17th, 2022, as Tag said. And it's different. It looks different than, it's not the bright, colorful, fun, whimsical collection that we already have. It's a more classic looking thing. Think of like what like Disneyland 60th, how we had like the nice silver and blue, and you know, like it just looks more classic. That's what this is. So this is black and gold. Yeah, it's black, gold, and some hints of silver on these. They look very fun. You know me, I saw that t-shirt and I'm like, dang it. I want it. I'm not as in love with the pin.
Yeah,
but man,
I'm not in love with the pin either. But you know what they should have done? They could have made a ton of money on this. Is they should have made a pin for each of the floats.
Oh, man.
That would have been cool. That would have been cool. Oh. And if you wanted to get extra crazy, they could have made a pin for the floats that aren't even there anymore. And so you'd get like every float that's ever been in the parade. That would be amazing. Dang. That would be a collector's item.
Man.
But I do like this look. I like the gold and the silver, and it looks very classy. It's not too crazy over the top. Like, I feel like I could wear something like this around in the Midwest and not get a lot of, like, it's not blaringly colorful or anything like that.
It's not like super blaring. We know it's blaringly Disney because it's this iconic parade float from this, you know, from one of these favorite parades. But if you're not a Disney person, you don't know what the Main Street Electrical Parade is.
Right.
You may not even know who Elliot is. So which I feel bad for you.
Poor Elliot.
Poor Elliot. Fans of a certain Space Ranger can now meet their hero in his younger form from the new Lightyear movie. The character is now a face character and not the same version of Buzz from the Toy Story movies. This version fits in well with the new movie since the movie is about the real Buzz that the toy from Toy Story was based on. Guests can meet the new Buzz every hour until 4 p.m. daily.
In Tomorrowland.
Yes,
so, in Tomorrowland. I'm sorry, I didn't put those words in the script. So this is causing a lot of weirdness for people because Buzz has always been from Toy Story.
Yeah.
And this is now a face character, which I think people were a little taken aback by because they're so used to Buzz from the Toy Story movies. So I think once people realize and have seen the new movie, that they'll be like, oh, okay, this is the real person that the fictional person was based off of, basically.
Okay. That makes more sense. I was confused as to why this was a controversial thing. I was like, well, of course it's a face character because the new movie of Buzz, he's a person, so mm-hmm. he wouldn't be the toy version.
Right.
So yeah, so for those of you that don't know, maybe we can help clear up some confusion. So the new movie, Lightyear, is about the person Buzz. And basically, the thought process, I actually just watched this little documentary thing on Disney Plus on this. It was like 30 minutes if you haven't watched it. I wasn't really understanding why we needed this Lightyear movie, but now that I've watched this little thing that they did, I get it now. But so basically, they were trying to explain and tell the story behind why Andy was so excited about this new toy. What was it about this toy? And so they decided Andy must have gone to see a movie, and that's why he was so interested in Buzz, and that's how Andy got introduced to Buzz. Ooh. So Buzz Lightyear, the toy, was from this movie. So this would have been the movie that Andy would have watched.
Oh, interesting.
Was how they explained it. Maybe I got that wrong, but that was my takeaway from it. And I was like, well, that's really interesting. So if you're a person that doesn't realize that there's a new Buzz Lightyear movie out there,
right,
with Buzz Lightyear being portrayed as a person and not a toy,
right,
yeah, okay, I understand why this is confusing.
Yeah, but, I'm excited to see this movie. We are kind of waiting to see the movie because producer James's dad is a huge Buzz Lightyear fan. So the idea is that we will go see it with him because it's become to the point where he has, like, all these Buzz Lightyear toys, and there was, like, some shoes at one point or something. We sent him a picture from Disney World of Buzz Lightyear in his, like, Buzz Lightyear Corvette or, like, convertible. And we were like, is that the new car for you, Pete?
He needs to watch this little 30-minute thing because it's a 30-minute thing on Disney Plus that's all about Buzz Lightyear. It even went back to, like, concept art of trying to figure out what Buzz is going to look like and all that kind of stuff. It was really good. Oh, that one.
Beyond Infinity?
So it's on Disney Plus, and it's called Beyond Infinity. It was, again, short, 35 minutes. Very interesting watch, though.
Yeah. Where's my button? Here's my button. I added it to my to watch. It's 35 minutes. I'm very excited. Several pops of color in downtown Disney can be traced back to a Colombian-inspired tradition. The floral displays, or siletas, I hope that's right, are a celebration of flowers. Fittingly, they start with a massive display from Encanto's Isabella and move through the district. The displays are a big display of inclusion and representation, such as LGBTQ+ pride, Asian, Pacific Islander, and Hawaiian heritage, Judaism, women, Indigenous and First Nations people, Black, Hispanic, people of Latin heritage, and people with different abilities.
These look so cool, and it was so glad. Of course, we have the link in our show notes, but the Disney Parks blog did a really nice article talking about and explaining kind of the process and just explaining what each of these different displays or these siletas mean. I think that's so, so cool. My only thing is I love this article, and I kind of want to like be that person and print this article and like walk around and read the descriptions of these displays as I'm looking at them. So the only thing I wish, and maybe they do. Of course, we have not seen it in person since we haven't visited since they put these out. I hope that they have little like placards or some little thing, maybe even something that you scan so you can like read about what each of these different things represent. I think it's so cool.
Mice Chat said there was not any of that information. Oh. And that was their biggest gripe with it, was in their unique way of telling stories, they thought that they looked like funeral flowers.
Oh, no. There's so much more. No, I wouldn't agree with that at all.
Yeah.
I would say if I were to walk, I would be very, I don't want to say this. These would draw me in. They're bright, they're colorful, they're fun. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I would be able to connect the dots as to what the meaning behind each one is. So that's why I loved the article that Disney Parks blog did, because that kind of brought it, I don't know how to say it, full circle, I guess, for me, and like gave me the full picture. I thought it was super fun. And I didn't realize that the story behind it was that Isabella, like, did them.
Oh, yeah.
They have the Isabella topiary, and so I was like, oh! So that's what I saw first, was the Isabella topiary and her display. And so I thought that we would be seeing other Encanto characters in topiaries kind of pop up. So then when I started seeing kind of pictures here, there, and everywhere of the Salettas, I wasn't understanding the full picture. So I'm really thankful, and I'm really grateful for this article to do that for us.
Yeah, I really like that the Downtown Disney people, I feel like people always get so critical of the different things they do in Downtown Disney. I think it's neat that they keep trying things, because if they keep doing the same stuff over and over, it gets boring.
Well, and I think that it's exactly like you said. I think it's really fun that it changes, and that it's not something that you could almost set your watch to, like, oh, it's Halloween, we're going to see this exact same thing. You know, it's not.
People got all mad about the weird colored pumpkins. People got mad about the different trees around the holidays. People now are getting upset with all of this stuff. It's just silly to me. Like, just enjoy that they're trying something, folks. And then at night, all of these are individually lit completely differently. So I think that that's also amazing.
The other cool thing, which, again, I'm so glad that they did this article. I didn't notice this. Again, I would notice things differently if I were there looking at these displays in person. But Isabella's new fun, colorful plants that she created at the end of the movie are kind of scattered throughout each of these displays, which then ties it all in to say, hey, Isabella created these beautiful floral displays for us all to enjoy. See? I love that little detail. I think it's fun. Well, last week, Cars Land turned 10. The biggest part of the $1 billion expansion of the Disneyland Resort opened on June 15th, 2012. The Disney Parks blog posted 10 ways to celebrate the anniversary. Meeting Cars car actors, see what we did there, getting the new Tomator popcorn bucket from Flo's, or the Cozy Cone Motel, taking a photo with Guido in front of Luigi's, picking up a limited edition 10th anniversary Lightning McQueen and Tomator pin, and more. We did not put this in the article, but I wanted to mention, I got oddly excited because they brought back buttons. They brought back a celebration button. There was a 10th anniversary Cars Land button that they were handing out to guests that day. Now, it was also promoting a new, I believe there's a new miniseries or something like that coming to Disney Plus. So it's also promoting something new that's happening in the Cars universe. But I was just excited that it was celebrating the 10th anniversary.
Another thing that did end up reading of the story was another Disney Paper Parks set featuring all of Cars Land minus Radiator Springs Racers, it looks like, is also available for you to kind of cut out and build. I feel like pretty soon the entire resort will be Disney Paper Parks situation. Cars Land is great. I love Cars Land. I hope and wish that they would do more of that level of immersiveness in other parts of DCA. Well, a shop on Main Street that has been closed since the start of the pandemic appears to be on the way to coming back. The Silhouette Shop on Main Street has posted some job listings looking for artists for the location. So hopefully this location will reopen soon. I'm surprised it hasn't already reopened.
I would like to be... Well, I'm sure it's because of proximity and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I would love to be a fly on the wall to watch... Because last time we were there, the woman that... Our artist that did Vern and I's silhouettes... Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember how long she had told me she had been doing it. I mean, it was
A long time.
Like 30 plus years, mm-hmm. something kind of thing. And which makes sense because they do these things. If you've ever had your silhouette done at the studio, lightning fast. Like it's crazy
and so
how
good.
Well they do these and how fast they do them. So I would love to be a fly on the wall during the interview process and during the training because I can't imagine how much training. So the fact Maybe you have to be a seasoned silhouette artist before you could apply for this position. I feel like you'd have to be because, man, they are just...
I remember getting one done, and you were absolutely right. They, like, fly crazy. Through the things. Mm-hmm. And they're talking to you, too. Like, like it's not like they're paying, like, 50% attention to it, but whew. And then sometimes they do the ones where you can do two people together, and, like, that's a whole nother type of skill because you're doing, like, a... Anyway.
Yeah, where it's, like, two people in one piece of paper kind of thing. It's really incredible. If you've never had the experience, once the Silhouette Studio reopens, 100% recommend that you do it at least once. It's something that's very... very specific and very unique to Disney parks, specifically to Main Street here. And I just think it is so cool. I think it's something that a lot of people often overlook as well.
Yeah.
And it's not that expensive either.
No.
It really is quite affordable.
And you get like a frame and everything with it.
Mm-hmm. A couple of quick updates from around the resort. Over New Orleans Square, progress can be seen at Pirates of the Caribbean. The walls inside of the Blue Bayou restaurant have come down and the bayou is looking so fresh, so amazing. I know bayous are not fresh, but it looks very, very nice. Concrete and cobblestones are being set in the outdoor queue area, and at this time, it does not appear that Lightning Lane will be added to the classic attraction. Over in Tomorrowland, the new planters at the entrance are now complete.
I'm just looking at this picture that I don't know where you got this earlier today, but it was in our Discord chat. Teresa posted it.
I got it in one of the many Disney groups that I follow on various social media. It looks so nice.
It does look really great. Now, here's my question. Do we know, I can't tell from this photo, do we know if they fixed or repaired or replaced any of the fireflies?
I don't have an update on the fireflies.
Because I feel like I really want the fireflies back for sure. But I'm glad that we're getting closer to that. I'm glad that walls have come down about a lot of places and that we're getting closer. After the next episode, shortly after, Pirates should be open.
Yeah, it should. It seems to be that all signs are pointing to July 1st. Disney has not officially announced that is when it will be reopening, but that's when it came off the calendar for the refurbished calendar. So all signs are pointing to a July 1st reopening. I'm hoping beyond hope that poor Jack, Captain Jack Sparrow at the end, got all of the love and attention that he deserved because he was looking sad the last couple of times we saw him.
Yes.
His mouth wasn't moving. His eyes were only like half blinking. It was... oh, that poor animatronic.
I think you're right, because when I click on Pirates of the Caribbean, I scroll down, it says Pirates of the Caribbean will be closed for refurbishment from March 14th to June 30th.
Yep. All signs are pointing.
So let's cross all of our fingers and toes and our daggers
and our
hooks and peg legs.
our bottles of rum.
Bottles of rum. Well, guess what classic Disneyland treat has a new variation?
Never could I guess this, I'm sure.
Well, if you guessed a churro, you would be correct. This time, it's an orange pop churro, which is a churro covered in orange-flavored and colored sugar, and comes with a side of orange and vanilla dipping sauce for $6.75 near the Haunted Mansion. Are you okay?
I don't know how I feel about this. Because to me, right, churro, cinnamon... and sugar. Cinnamon, orange, and vanilla. I just don't know.
The Disney food blog reporter that tried it loved it.
They may not have... It might just be the churro, as in, like, the dough, and then just an orange sugar. No cinnamon. Maybe the cinnamon has been left at home or something. I can't wrap my head around it, but I'm also oddly curious about it. So if I were local, I would definitely have to try this just because I need to know.
I need to know this one. So in this article from the Disney Food Blog that we have linked in our show notes, they said, "We think anyone enjoyed this treat as long as you're a fan of churros and orange flavored treats. If you don't love orange, maybe go for a green apple churro with caramel dipping sauce. That sounds scrumdiddlyumptious.
It does. See, now that one doesn't sound as good to me. There is a Bananas Foster churro. I want to say it's over in Cars Land. That one sounds good, too. I could see, again, things that I could see cinnamon going along with make more sense to me. But I guess, you know what? I need to, like, open my mouth and insert the foot because I loved that blueberry churro. There was no cinnamon with the blueberry churro. That blueberry
cream. Yeah, so it's probably the same kind of thing.
One, I bet you I'd like the orange one then.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I'm feeling better about the orange churro.
I want to try this apple one because I love apple and caramel together, so that would be really good.
Cinnamon would have worked with that too. Apple, cinnamon,
mm-hmm,
and caramel.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm feeling better about this.
So maybe it'll still be there when we're there in September and we can try one. Probably not,
though.
That
might be a stretch with how quickly they
keep switching things around.
Churro flavors, yes.
I feel like there's got to be a kitchen somewhere in Disneyland where they're just like, how many different flavors can we throw into sugar?
Yeah. Could you imagine?
And then dipping sauces. That's been come a whole thing.
Part of the churro creation crew.
Mm.
Ooh, that'd be cool.
Mm.
I got to write that down. We need a t-shirt. Churro creation crew.
You going to give me a wonderful Teresa-esque drawing to turn into something?
Sure.
Okay.
Speaking of food, the Red Rose Tavern in Fantasyland has received some extended hours and a new late-night dining menu option. From 8:30 until at least 11 p.m., there are some new offerings like a classic poutine, a plant-based chili cheese poutine, the Firelight Fries, and, of course, a pickle. The normal menu options are not available during these late-night dining times. There is also late-night dining over at the Galactic Grill, and they only have one item on the menu for the Galactic Grill, and they're Hawaiian style tenders. So chicken tenders tossed in a traditional Hawaiian style sauce served with french fries.
So when I wrote this article, I just saw like a screenshot of the menu. I didn't see any pictures or anything. Seeing pictures, some of this stuff looks good. Now you have turned me on to plant-based things. So I love chili and cheese. So the fact that they have this chili cheese thing sounds really amazing. The regular poutine kind of looks pretty good too. And then, of course, these chicken tender things look pretty good as well. By the way, I just want to talk about this chili cheese poutine while you're looking that up. It's a hearty plant-based chili and shredded dairy-free cheese on a seasoned waffle fries. This sounds really great. And I want to eat it. So I hope that they still have this late night menu when we're there because I would totally buy this.
Thank you, Corrine. Firefly chips at Refreshment Corner. I feel less crazy now. I was like, wait. Don't we have this already? So Magic Journeys tried the plant-based option.
Okay.
And the classic poutine. And they actually liked the plant-based chili fries better.
That's good. I mean, it looks good.
But anyway, so yeah, I watched Magic Journeys, and they tried out the Hawaiian-style tenders, and they tried a couple of the dishes at Red Rose and enjoyed them. And they really, like I said, they really liked the plant-based chili ones, which makes me even more excited, and hopefully this it's interesting. I don't know if this late-night dining thing is just going to be around for the summer, or if this is something here to stay. I think it's a good idea.
I think it's a good idea, too.
I think it's a really nice idea.
Psst. Avast there. Here comes seeking questions and long-lost Disney information, eh? Sure, you come to the proper place, but keep a weather eye open, mates, and hold on tight with both hands, if you please. There be squalls ahead. And James and Vern waiting for them what don't answer correctly.
Welcome to Trivia Land. It's been too long since I've been out of the park. So I'm glad to be back and giving you some trivia questions. Hope you two are excited to have me again as well.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you, Teresa.
I mean, it depends. Are you going to be easy on us?
No, why would
well,
I ever
then I'm
do
not
that?
As excited.
All right. Well, we'll see how we do. On a recent episode, I heard a great idea from one of you that we should start describing food, and you should tell us where it is in the park.
Good job, Tag.
So, I think I'm starting easy with this one on you, just to get your feet wet in it. So,
this is no cause for celebration. Take that out.
First question. Where in the park can I order a fresh-baked sourdough bread bowl with either slow-roasted beef stew or creamy corn chowder?
Oh, this is the beef stew or corn chowder, but not clam chowder.
Not clam chowder.
That's gotta be at the...
The Budin. No, but they also have clam chowder, don't they?
Well, you can't get beef stew in Disneyland that I know of. I'm saying on the Pacific Wharf at the Budin Bakery, the restaurant.
Yeah. I mean, because everywhere else I think of has clam chowder, because I think the Harbor Galley has clam chowder.
I mean, maybe that's also on the menu.
But I think he would tell us that you could also get clam chowder if you could get clam chowder.
Correct.
Yeah. And the Royal Street Veranda definitely has clam chowder, because that's like where I used to always
Harbor
get it
Valley
from.
Harbor Galley has clam chowder.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with you and say the Budin Bakery, whatever the... Pacific Wharf Cafe, that's what it is.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Pacific Wharf Cafe.
All right, question number two. Put the five songs you hear in the Tiki Room in order. Well, and if you need the songs, I can give you those.
In the Tiki Room.
Yep.
Tiki, 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 tiki room.
Okay. Then they have the Let's All Sing Like the Birdies Sing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's the one that the girls sing that come down and say, hey, Fifi, me. That song.
Let's All Sing Like the Birdie Sing.
Oh, you're right.
And then they have the musical Luau, and I don't know what the name of that.
How many songs are there?
You hear five songs while you're in the room.
Can you give us the name of the five songs?
Yeah, we're going to need the
Yes. The five songs are the Hawaiian War Chant, Hi-Ho, the finale, Let's All Sing Like the Birdie Sing, and the Tiki Tiki
okay.
Tiki
okay.
Tiki
Hi-Ho
Tiki.
Hi-Ho is last.
Three, four, five.
Hi-Ho's
no,
last.
The finale is last.
No. The finale comes before because they say, now, while you're all standing... Whatever, they go, hi-ho,
oh,
hi-ho.
Okay, that's what you meant by hi-ho.
Yeah,
okay.
That's the, yep, and then the finale, and then the Hawaiian War Chant, if we're going backwards. I feel really good about this
one. Wow, the Hawaiian War Chant's very long. I thought that was, like, two songs, but yeah, I suppose that would be, it doesn't have a stop in the middle of it, just kind of keeps continuing
yep.
on. Because you got the, yeah, because I always thought the flowers coming down, I don't know.
Yeah.
Now that I think of it, yeah, it's separate.
Yep.
I just get so excited about the, ooh, ah. Yeah, the little, the totem pole thing. Or
yeah.
Not the totem poles, the little chanting posts thing.
The totem poles. The totem poles.
Yeah, they're cool.
Yeah. I like the boom, 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 boom,
yeah,
boom,
the drumming
boom,
tiki yeah. thing. Yeah.
A lot of goodness there. All right, moving on to our third question from Jordan B. How many diamond-shaped stones are in the Indiana Jones queue? Not just the walkway, but in the queue.
Wait, what?
How many diamond-shaped stones are in the queue?
And what was your clarification?
It's not just the walkway, but it could be, say, on the walls, perhaps.
Oh, gosh, I don't know. Is it double digits?
It is double digits.
So not triple digits. How are we supposed to know this?
I'm saying 13. I don't think there's that many, but that's just me.
13?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going crazy, James.
Going crazy.
And I'm
going
to say that it's like signifies like the year it was opened or whatever. So I'll do 95.
95. Nice. All right. And our last question. Where am I in the park? I was with Teresa. She started her day in California Adventure at the spot she always does. I head south down the large path. I pass a waterfall, some glowing blue lights, and some crazy country party. I avoid any roads and instead head down next to the peaceful water. I take my next left and go to the furthest left path from there before stumbling upon the first restaurant I see, though I'll have to wait until lunch to get some grub. Where am I eating?
You head left?
I'll walk you through it one more time.
Yeah,
I was
please.
With Teresa. She started her day in California Adventure at the spot she always does.
So, knowing James, coffee. Last time you were there, it was probably the Starbucks on Buena Vista Street. Okay.
I head south down the large path. I pass a waterfall, some glowing blue lights, and some crazy country party.
So, the crazy country thing is going to be Mater's Junkyard Jamboree.
Oh, sure, yep.
And the waterfall on the side. So, we're going down the main parade route.
I avoid any roads and instead head down next to the peaceful water.
Okay, so that's by where the food place is.
I take my next left and go on the furthest left path from there that I can.
So now you're by the Pacific Wharf.
Before stumbling upon the first restaurant I see, though I'll have to wait until lunch to get some grub. Where am I eating?
So is he at the Lucky Fortune Cookery, or is he at
the... No, the Lucky Fortune Cookery's on the right.
Well, he didn't say if it was on the right or left. He just said the first thing he comes to, right?
I did not say. I'm happy to specify, though, if you think that would be helpful.
Because I think, is it Lucky Fortune Cookery on the right? Because that's where I waited that line forever. Yeah. And then there was there's the Pacific Wharf Cafe. And then what's that other place that's like, because there's like the beer stand, and then there's something across from Lucky Fortune Cookery.
Oh, that's like the margarita hut thing.
Well, there's that, but there's like another building that's like Lucky Fortune Cookery that has a bunch of windows. It's because there's the bathrooms, and then there's those windows of something that you eat there, and I don't remember what that's called.
No, I think that's the Lucky Fortune Cookery.
Well, then what's on the other side? Because they're not both Lucky Fortune Cookery.
I think the whole thing's Lucky Fortune Cookery. I don't think there's two restaurants there. Because last time I was over there, there was seating next to the bathroom. There wasn't another queue there. There was only one queue for Lucky Fortune Cookery that's, like, on the path.
Did you figure it out, James?
Did I figure it out?
If it's a right or left.
Oh, it's on the right.
Yeah, Lucky Fortune Cookery.
Yeah, then Lucky Fortune Cookery. I thought we were staying left.
Yeah, he didn't specify it, so he specified.
Lucky.
It was the first one that I stumbled into, which, to help your clarification, is on my right.
Yeah.
At least according to this map in the app.
Okay.
Well, let's hope you found where I am in the park, otherwise I'm eating for three on my own, right? How'd you do, listeners? Are you able to keep up with everything? We'll have to wait until after our discussion topic this week to find out how we did.
Well, this week for our discussion topic, we are talking to Weekly Tier Kaveihi, who, from the name, you can probably tell she lives in Hawaii, and she is the Assistant Professor of Hospitality and Tourism Management, and the reason she's on our show is that she took a VIP tour at Disneyland, and based on her background, we're going to hear some really interesting things about this and her opinions of how Disney kind of does all this, which I'm very excited to hear about. So, Kaveihi, welcome to the show.
Aloha. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Thanks for being on.
She's just making me, like, want to go.
Because you've been to Hawaii. Islands.
Yes, it is gorgeous. And I'm seeing, like, so for those of you, you guys are listening, but we're on a Zoom call with her, and I'm seeing the, like, sunshine peek through her window behind her. I'm just like, oh.
And it's 80 degrees.
Sunny, it's 77 beautiful. Here, so it's about the same.
It's not too bad here.
I will say, so we're recording this at about 7:30 in the evening, and I was surprised when we got your email back that it was 2:30 in the afternoon there. I was like, wow, that is quite the time difference.
It is, but I'm on summer break, so I've got all day.
And awesome.
That's perfect. So, Kaveihi, can you tell us about your Disney story and how you got to become the Disney Parks fan that you are today?
Well, it actually, my Disney story started even before I was born. My mother worked at the 1964 World Fair.
Ooh. Oh, man, we could go like a whole other episode just on that.
Correct. So a bunch of young adults from Hawaii lived in Flushing, New York for about a year. They worked the Hawaii exhibit, which meant she went on It's a Small World and saw Abe Lincoln. So she was a fan. I was born a decade later, and in the late 70s, my family moved to Orange County. So my parents went to visit my uncle and my aunt often, and they started taking us in 1978. Disneyland is actually my first memory ever. I was about 3.5 years old, and my father lost me. from It's a Small World, and I was just going down.
That got dark quick.
Yeah, sorry.
It's my first memory. My father lost me.
Yes. But the way my father retells it is they could see me and they could see security pick me up. Mm-hmm, That's how good Disney was.
Wow.
And what I remember most about it is when I got to City Hall, the very sincere security officer looked into my eyes. He bent down so he could, you know, look at me face to face. And he said, "Don't worry, little boy. Your parents will find you." I was like mortified because it was in the 70s. You can imagine maybe what I was wearing. So it was a mortifying sort of experience, but it's just so ingrained. And really the way my parents remember it is they had utmost confidence in Disney. And just from there, with my family living nearby, we would go almost every summer. My grandmother would take us. My grandmother was this very tall Hawaiian woman. She didn't want to ride much. So she would park herself on a bench. She would tell us kids just to go and ride. And, you know, we would go to Videopolis. Yes, that was the Videopolis days in the 80s. Ride the Matterhorn. And we would come back 2 hours later to the same bench. And she is sitting there. And we have no idea what she did for 2 hours. We could imagine she would just talk to people. But she rode really a small hand. Small, you could count the number of rides on one hand that she actually rode with us. So, you know, it's just a thing. And I live in Hawaii, so I don't want to go to surf sand and see destinations. I want to go to someplace a little bit different. So Disney has always been on our radar.
That's really interesting, because I was talking about this with our exchange students that, you know, one thing Americans like to do, right, they go to Europe because it's so different. And then last time we had exchange students, we had somebody who lived in Italy, like, you know, not too far from Venice. And it's just so interesting because I have to remind myself with places like Hawaii that people live here and it's a great place for us to go. And to us, it's like this fun, amazing, you know, thing. But what do people that live in these vacation destinations, what do they want to do if they live there all the time? So the fact that Disneyland, you know, you don't need to go to a, you know, you guys have some of the best beaches anywhere in the world. So like, why would you want to go to the beach and have more sun? Like, you get that a lot. So it's kind of cool that Disneyland kind of did that. Now they just need to build one out there, right? Like a little park next to Aulani or something. That would just be great, right?
No, we're okay with not having a park. We want to still go to Anaheim, and our home airlines, Hawaiian Airlines, now flies direct to Orlando.
Oh.
So it's, you know, Walt Disney World has sort of gotten on our radar as well. So we're okay with that. And we love Las Vegas. Again, we just kind of love these man-made attractions that take us to another place in another time.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Well, when you do go to Disneyland on the first day of a visit, which way do you go? Do you go left towards Adventureland, through the castle to Fantasyland, right towards Tomorrowland? What's kind of your game plan on that first day?
The usual game plan will be left into Adventureland. Pirates was not open this time, but that would, you know, that's about our second ride after Indiana Jones.
That's a way to do it.
It's normally left.
I mean, left is the place to go, man.
Your day just is better if you start.
You know what I feel like we need to start asking? We need to start asking about DCA, because I'm curious, like, where people go in DCA first. Where do you go on your first day at DCA? Where do you go?
Incredicoaster.
So to the back, basically. Where do we go? We kind of just scattershot depending on what we're trying to do.
Yeah. I usually try to do Soarin'. It seems like a lot of times I try and hook right over to Soarin', because for me, Soarin', that once the attraction wait time gets up there, I really don't like waiting in that queue, because you don't move. So it feels like an eternity.
And it's not a great themed queue. You're just in a hallway.
Yeah. So, and yeah, boring.
Once you're inside.
Kind of a boring hallway and just stuck. Yeah. So yeah, I don't like waiting for that one. So I try and get that one.
Well, I think that not that many people go that way either, because everybody goes towards Radiator Springs or Guardians now. So it's kind of an easy little boop, 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 like it was this time
we went. Right past one of the coffee places.
Yeah, well.
So what is your favorite attraction?
It's Pirates. It's hands down Pirates. And so this trip was, we were very disappointed. It was closed, and it's still closed. And it was deflating.
You're like, excuse me, I'm on a VIP tour. Can we still go?
Exactly. But I did get my fill of Captain Jack. So
that's good.
I can speak to that a little bit later. But it's Pirates.
So what is it about Pirates?
You know, again, it was one of the few rides my grandmother would ride. Oh. So that is the emotional connection. My son was young when the movies came out. And so he's grown up on the franchise. Mm-hmm. And you can never go wrong. And I think the last time we went, we got wet on Pirates. Like, he gets wet on Pirates. So
it seems more and more happening lately.
Yeah.
That was in 2019. And my son got wet. And the second time, he wanted to ride with a poncho. And so I just think it's funny. And it's changed a little bit. You know, I know it pre-Captain Jack. And, you know, pre-red curtain, her transformation. Mm-hmm. And I'm very fond of either version, but mm-hmm. yeah, you can't go wrong with like a 15 minute ride.
Right.
Summer day.
Oh yeah. And it's air conditioned. Yeah. You feel like I'm a sucker for anywhere that transports you outside when you're inside.
Yes.
Because it really feels like you're outside in a lot of that attraction. And it's just so well done. And the fact that it is as old as it is and is still so popular and still can still sit at the top tier of Disneyland attractions is just really impressive. So same thing with Haunted Mansion and, you know, a lot of those things. So that's great. I want to start, before we get to Disneyland stuff, I just kind of want to talk a little bit about, so you're the assistant professor of hospitality and tourism management. How did you get into that? Like, was your history with Disney kind of got you into that, or totally unrelated and just happens to be a good coincidence?
A little bit. So I, after college, started out in public relations and with tourism-related companies, and then I moved to work for one of the largest resorts on Oahu, and I worked for the Hilton Hawaiian Village and stayed there for the start of my career. And an opportunity came for me to go to the university and to work for the University of Hawaii's School of Travel Industry Management, right? So it's our biggest industry here in Hawaii. That's no surprise. And then I moved to community college. So it just kind of progressed, I suppose. When I was at Hilton working in the hotel, I was a trainer. And so training employees and team members is just like training college mm-hmm. students or teaching college students. But while I was at the university, I was in my master's program, and an elective course I could take was theme park management, taught a former Jungle Cruise skipper and a former cast member. So he kind of ignited the business part of the business interest, because I had just been a park goer. Mm-hmm. So I started looking into more of that and kind of reading between the lines of what is publicly available, right? We know Disney doesn't give us a lot of insider scoop, right? And we have to make all of these assumptions. But the course did help me understand, again, that business portion of theme park management. So it's just been an interest, and I've kind of had my pulse on a lot of things, obviously through podcast, and you know, there are a lot of YouTubers mm-hmm. or Instagrammers that we both follow and subscribe to. So I just love it. I love taking my kids there. It's the vacation of choice. So while I don't teach a theme park management course per se, that part and what makes Disney most special, obviously, is their customer service. So mm-hmm. we actually teach from a book, Be Our Guest. So that book is really the gold standard when it comes to customer service. We do have a class in customer service, so I teach from there. I teach from that book as well. So it's just kind of threaded throughout my curriculum at the community college. But yeah, it's kind of, I guess, how everything weaves together.
That's awesome.
Cool. That's really cool. So I am too impatient to wait.
Oh, you go ahead.
Tell us about your VIP tour, because when you first started chatting, you're like, this is not something we do all the time. So this was a really special thing for you and your family to experience. So can you kind of tell us the backstory on, you know, how the VIP tour came to be for you?
Sure, sure. So we did have a 2020 vacation planned in summer 2020, which obviously was canceled. Mm-hmm. And we thought, you know, we're going to go. Whenever we get the green light, we are going to go. And it just took a while. So before now, you know, 2020 and now, I was just saving my money. We do not have the type of means that it is expensive. Mm-hmm. I should just like rip off the Band-Aid now and tell you guys how much, because I do know that your listeners are probably very curious. So it, I believe it does fluctuate based on season. Seasonal pricing.
As everything does now with Disney.
Yeah. But I will tell you what we paid. So it is a minimum of 7 hours. You do get one guide for 10 guests. We only had four. It was just our family at $600 an hour. So it was $4,200.
Wow.
Yeah. So I have been saving up for this experience. Mm-hmm. And again, it's not something we normally would just book. But I did, I was curious in a professional way. I wanted to see what these tours were like, mm-hmm. because growing up or going, you only saw plaids with celebrities.
Yeah. Right?
Or
yeah.
what we thought, right? Mm-hmm. Which is actually true. Maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but our tour guide did say they're averaging about 40 tours now. Pre-COVID, they were at about 10 to 12.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, I think what happened is people didn't go on vacations for 2 years. They have a lot of savings saved up. And so they're like, you know what? Let's splurge on a plaid situation.
Absolutely. Wow. Absolutely. And we have splurged on the Disneyland Hotel as well. So we're like, oh, it was another $4,000. Let me just save that. Yeah,
right.
Let me just like save a little bit more for that as well. So we were like, we booked the Disneyland Resort, the Disneyland Hotel first. And then we really had that conversation. My husband and I said, look, if we just save a little bit more,
yeah.
let's just go all out. And then we said, like, well, let's just save a little bit more and then do World of Color dessert party.
So. You're like, we're going to have the most epic comeback trip to Disneyland.
it certainly was. And
wow.
we did a cabana day at the pool as well. So
Disneyland accountants are like, yes, we have her now.
Yes.
All of the layers of magic just right there. You didn't even have to leave the bubble. Man,
exactly.
Good for you.
Exactly. So we checked it off the bucket list.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I made the call. So you can speak directly to a tour VIP tour coordinator. And I went on the phone with her for about 25, 30 minutes. Just, you know, it's not transactional. The VIP part started at the phone call, truly.
Wow. Wow.
She just kind of wanted to get to know us. What do we want to experience on the tour? And for us, it was like rides. That's what we wanted. I really wasn't interested in hidden Mickeys. I wasn't really interested in too much history of the park. I kind of know some of those things. So
us non-VIP tour people, how does this even start? So do you just pick up the phone and say, hey, I'm interested in a VIP tour. Tell me, like, is that how you begin the process of booking a tour? Is you just pick up the phone?
Uh-huh. So wow. I first sent an email because I was interested in pricing, because mm-hmm. I wanted to know, is this in my reach?
Yeah.
And when she came back and she said, for that date, it is 7 hours, minimum $600 an hour. Then please call us if you're interested in booking. So, yep, I picked up the phone and I gave her my credit card. Well, we talked. Gave her my credit card.
You're like, just take my money. Just take it.
And it's not charged, you know, like with most things, you have a cancellation period. Mm-hmm. So it was not charged until I think the day of.
Sure.
And then I followed up with some emails because I had a list. So she did ask, is there a list of rides you want, must do? So I gave her a list of really all the e-ticket stuff. About 16 rides. And I
should have been like, do you have a park map? That's my list.
Yes. You gotta have priorities, Teresa. You gotta prioritize.
Okay, sorry.
But I did give them, it was actually in order. It was, you know, from Adventureland through Critter Country up to Star Wars. And so I did map it out, what we wanted to start with, because my reservation did start with Disneyland, and then we did have a hopper for that day. And then I had, I didn't know this, and I found out in the phone call that you get seating at the parade.
Oh, yeah.
And I was
That's
like,
a big deal.
I was in tears because I've seen the 1978 version of this parade. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. so I was not expecting that. And my tour ended at 6, and I was like, wait, but
the seating.
Yeah. And she goes, no, yeah, you just come back. There's going to be someone there. So you have seating. And they also assisted us with reservations for dinner. So we had 6 o'clock reservations at Carnation Cafe. So that's kind of where she dropped us off. So, and so they assisted because you know how horrible, maybe horrible is that the
challenging.
Yes. Yeah.
It's very challenging to get dining reservation. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So that really helped us.
So, did you have something?
I want to go back a little bit in the phone call because you said something that I'm like, there's options. So when do they kind of talk through and say, when you said something like she asked what type of tour we were interested in and you said your focus was rides. How do I want to say this? Did they kind of tell you like, hey, we offer, you know, A, B, C, or D. Do you want to know about, you know, or how does that work? Or did you just being the person you are and the fan you are say, this is what I want, make it happen. Like that was interesting to me. I'm like, you can like tell them what you want to do.
Well, you're paying for it for $600 an hour.
You just kind of went with their flow and they just did stuff.
You know, they didn't give me too many options, but you're right. I was very decisive. I knew what I wanted out of the tour. And I mean, I watched one of the influencers. They are influencers, aren't they? But I did see Provost Park Pass and Ordinary Adventures go on these tours. So that's what sort of sparked the interest.
Sure.
And to me, both of them were a little bit more casual. Like they were in huge groups. They were just kind of meandering. And I was like, oh, I don't want that. I'm paying a lot of money. I need this to get the most out of it. So she didn't really give me, you can do A, B, or C. I was really decisive. However, she did tell me, you know, if there were any special requests, like, and I was like, special requests? No, I don't know what I don't know. And she said, well, for example, like if the Lily Bell was running and you wanted to go on that, you could ask us. I was like, whoa, the Lily Bell's not running. So, so that didn't come true for us. I think it's kind of, there are things like if we wanted to have hidden Mickeys, we certainly could have asked. If we wanted to know all the secrets of the rides or insider scoops, we could have asked that. But I didn't have very many expectations other than please help us ride these awesome rides.
Gotcha.
If the monorail, I'm sure we can't get into the pilot's cockpit right now, I think because of COVID. But I think those are the types of things that you can ask.
Request.
I feel like it's something that's easy enough for them to do that doesn't really cost them anything but makes a big difference to the people paying the big amount. So
correct.
All right, so you call the number, you go, you are very decisive, so you told them kind of what you wanted, how many guests, all of that stuff, you gave them your card number, I assume you got things scheduled, they told you when to show up and all of that kind of stuff. Day of, so what do you have to do to start the tour, where do you go, when do you find out who your tour guide's going to be, do you get them beforehand, like Teresa did with her wedding, like she got her wedding planner early, do you get something like that?
No, we don't, and I do follow a couple of tour guides on Instagram and I thought, oh, maybe I should request them. But then I'll just get who I get. And I was quite thrilled actually with who I got. But now if you stay at the resort, they will meet you at your hotel.
That's cool.
If you're staying at the Disneyland Hotel or Grand Californian, they will meet you there. So it was great because we went on this tour the day after we got in. And my son graduated on Sunday. We flew on Monday and we went to the park on Tuesday. We didn't stop. We went to Goofy's Kitchen for breakfast. We wanted to get a really good breakfast because we did not want to stop for lunch. This is hardcore because sitting down and eating is taking up my ride time. So we met.
What, $600 or whatever it was an hour?
Yeah, you're not going to spend $300 eating a quick meal.
Right. That's right. So we ate a huge breakfast at Goofy's Kitchen. And then we were set to start at the teacups in the Disneyland Hotel lobby, meet our tour guide at 11. I got a text at about 10:40 saying that she was here. Oh, wow. And if I'm running late, she could meet us elsewhere. And I said, no, I'm coming down from Adventure Tower right now. So we met her a little bit early. and we asked if we could be taken in through the monorail because my time was my money, right? And so I knew that I could get to a ride faster through the monorail than going through the main gate, and she was happy to do that. And so it really started right when we got through onto the monorail at Downtown Disney.
Wow. So do your park tickets, are they included, or do you have to purchase your park tickets in addition?
We still have to purchase our
park tickets. Wow, you would think for $600 an hour. What is your first magical tour guide experience once you get into the parks?
So I think you folks have talked about it. It's not a secret that the parks and your park experience has changed dramatically. And we are so attached to our phones. And so I really expected that. And it did come later on in the other days that we went, but it was amazing. I scanned my ticket, and other than taking my phone out for pictures, I wasn't on my phone, but my tour guide was, right? Yeah. She's checking the wait times. She is prioritizing our day based on what we gave her, but she knew, like, we were in the monorail, and she knew that ride. I think one of the rides was, oh, Space Mountain, I think, was down. But by the time we got into the park, it had come back up. And so she thought, that's the first ride. Because I think our first ride was supposed to be Indy on my list. So she sort of pivoted, and she knew that this was the most opportune time to get us on Space Mountain. And so we sort of adjusted our little circle to start with Space Mountain. I think, Teresa, the biggest sort of magical experience, and it encompassed our whole day, was that we were in a bubble. We surely felt that we were in this very safe bubble. We were walking fast, so I will tell you, if you want the experience that we had, being fit or being, you know,
get your walking shoes.
It was a 10-mile day. It was a 10-mile day, and we were going fast, but she really protected us. And it's a very strange way to describe it, but her body language and the way that she moves her arms, and it's not pushing people away, like, get out, I have people. It's a very nice way of doing it. She used these hand motions with an open hand to sort of corral us here and ensure that nobody cut in front of us there. And that, to me, I think she was just so focused on keeping us together, keeping us through our ride. It felt special. It really did. So how it works is you do stand in a little line. Mm-hmm. If the ride has a lightning lane, you're going through the lightning lane. And the best part of it, she goes first. She kind of scans something, like she's wearing a badge. She scans it. You just follow her behind. Meanwhile, all the people are like trying to get on their apps and and scan their tickets. And I'm like, I'm sorry.
Do you see her? She's our fast pass.
I'm with her. So again, it took, like, my phone was just not even really a part of that, right? We were just following her. A wonderful conversationalist with me, my husband, and my children. It was very easy. She shared some things about rides if they had, like, Splash Mountain, like the wettest seats, the driest seat. But she would go all the way up with us. We got, lanes one and two, and she didn't ride. She only rode one ride with us. And I do believe that is by choice. But most of it was because she didn't want to take away seats from other guests.
Sure.
So, right. So Space Mountain, it's two and two. There's four of us. She didn't want really to be the fifth, that additional row. But it's like magic. We would get there. We would get in our ride vehicle. We're kind of like, hey, bye. And she would magically appear at the exit. It was just amazing. So she did that through, obviously, the lightning lane. Anything without a lightning lane, like Peter Pan, which I was really worried about, because who wants to stand in a 45-minute wait for Peter Pan? But
that's $400 line.
That's right. Well, we were in the 3-minute Peter Pan line. Jeez. It's not the exit. There is another. You probably wouldn't see it if you were in line, but there is a cast member standing somewhere near there, and we just kind of got into that last line.
That's cool.
Yeah. So that happened in Fantasyland because we don't have Lightning Lane in Fantasyland.
So I'm curious about your tour guide. In talking with her, did she communicate like how long she had been doing this or anything like that? And did you get the feel? I know this sounds really like a silly question, but I'm just curious. Like, do you think if you would have asked her to ride with you, she would have ridden with you? I mean, you don't want to force somebody to do anything, but I'm just curious.
You know, I think she would have. There were some hard passes. I can't remember which one. She had mentioned that. Goofy Sky School. That's what it was. She said that she did ride, and she does ride with guests. There was a VIP that had a child that needed to be held, I believe, comforted, and she rode Goofy Sky School multiple times. That was, I think, his favorite ride. And she was like, I was kind of done with Goofy Sky School after that. but I think she would have. She was very kind. She had been working for Disneyland for 10 years.
Oh, wow.
I believe. Her most memorable VIP was Oprah Winfrey.
Wow.
The year that she, I think it was a D23 year where she was inducted.
Wow.
So, yeah. And I believe she was not the lead, but a few days prior to ours, Jon Favreau was in the park. Mm-hmm. So I believe she kind of worked that team. That was a very large entourage that he brought. So a lot of the guys were working on that day. So I think she was part of that day as well. But yeah, I was, you know, we were able to talk about those things. And she was just wonderful to sort of chat with. And I wish I either recorded it or took better notes. But it was just like having a conversation with a friend. Just so easy to talk with. And I didn't feel like, awkward silence.
Yeah.
Standing in line. Yeah. But really, she came in clutch. So we went. I mentioned she rode with us on one ride. And it was the one that mattered. So we were on Big Thunder Mountain. Mm-hmm. My boys were in, I think there were 15 rows. My boys were in 13, my husband and I in 14, and she rode in 15. And I got a selfie. I took a selfie of the three of us. And I put my phone in the pouch. Now, I don't normally. I wasn't wearing a hat. I don't have ears. So I don't normally use the pouches, but this is the first trip, sorry, super tangent, but this is the first trip I never traveled with a backpack. When you have children, you always have a backpack, right? You've got wipes and a change of clothes. So I finally graduated. I didn't need a backpack. So I had a little hip pack, a fanny pack. And my children had all kinds of things that they wanted me to carry, cell phones, wallet. So I didn't have room for my phone. So I put my phone in the pouch. And then great ride. Again, it was the only ride she rode with us. And then we were walking to Indiana, and she said something about mobile ordering. And I was like, I left my phone on Big Thunder Mountain.
Oh, no.
My husband wanted to strangle me.
Oh, no.
And she did not even blink an eye. You guys go on Indiana and I will meet you at the exit. And she went to go get my phone. And the whole time we're walking through Lightning Lane into Indy, my husband was like, what are you going to do? You lost your phone. My kids are like, can't you try and find it? I'm like, what? Don't worry. She's got this. I had full confidence inside. I was really freaking out. Really freaking out. I mean, I've never lost a phone before. And I have confidence in Disney. I don't have confidence in Disney guests. And for, you know, I I don't know.
You never know. Yeah.
You never know. So we're still in line in Indiana. And it's like a maze. I couldn't even tell you where we were, but we hadn't gotten to the front of the line yet. And all of a sudden she shows up. She's like, here you go.
You're like, where did you come magic. From?
Not only did she run over there, apparently, or teleport over there, but then she came back through the whole queue and got to you before you were even on the ride. Like, who does that?
I thought she would just meet us at the exit. You know, and she found me in line. She had my phone. She was our savior. Apparently, I think it went through a cycle, and then a guest
got an extra ride.
Yeah, she knew exactly what seat I was in.
Yeah,
And it was amazing. It was really
wow.
My husband said it made it worth it.
Well, we continue to have such a great conversation with Kavehi that we will continue the rest of her interview on next week's episode.
Looks like we're coming in for a landing, gang. But please stay listening until trivia comes to a stop. And then yous can walk to the nearest exit. Thanks for listening to the 8th Wonder of the World, DO Weekly.
All right, welcome back to Trivia Land. I think we had some fun this week. At least, I did. Starting off with our first question.
I mean, I think we did okay, but I guess we'll find out.
Starting off with our first question, which I thought was going to be easy, but I guess there's a lot more bread bowls in the park than I knew. Where in the park can I order a fresh-baked sourdough bread bowl with either slow-roasted beef stew or creamy corn chowder? I omitted a word from one of the food recipes to make it a little more challenging. I think you would have changed your mind if I would have said with either slow-roasted Louisiana beef stew or creamy corn chowder. You needed to find me at the French Market restaurant.
Yep. As soon as he said, I'm like, oh no. Gumbo. Dang it.
Dang it.
Yes. Our second question. Put the Tiki Room songs in order. Without help, I was thinking Hi-Ho was going to be the one to trick you up. But as soon as you got that list, you got the 5 in perfect order. The Tiki 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 Room, Let's All Sing Like the Birdie Sing, the Hawaiian War Chant, the finale, and Hi-Ho. Well done, you two.
Thank you.
Our third question this week from listener Jordan B. How many diamond-shaped stones are in the Indiana Jones queue? Therese, I'm going to give you the point because it's 12. Woo-hoo! And you said 13. That's close enough for me. Jordan shared a story. The time we rode this attraction after counting the stones, we got stuck in the skeleton room with the lights on for 20 minutes. Whoa. And then only our Jeep had to be in-show exited. She said the ride engineer cast member also showed us a very special hidden Mickey and answered a few questions we had about his job. It was amazing.
Wow. Even got a cool story with it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Those nice little details. And our final question, where am I in the park? I was with Teresa. She started her day in California Adventure at the spot she always does. You were right, Starbucks. I head south down a large path. I pass a waterfall, some glowing blue lights, and some crazy country party. I avoid any roads and instead head down next to the peaceful water. I take my next left and go on the furthest path left from there before stumbling upon the first restaurant I see. Though I'll have to wait until lunch to grab some grub. Where am I eating? You two crossed the courtyard to get to the Lucky Fortune Cookery. Not even close. I'm stopping at the Cochina Cucamonga Mexican Grill. I probably would have accepted the Private Wharf Cafe as well, because you would have been pretty close to that one. But not the Lucky Fortune Cookery.
We took one too many lefts.
Ba-bum, ba-bum, meow.
Something like that. So I guess I'm eating a lot of Mexican food on my own.
I mean, I don't think you'll be upset about that.
No. But hopefully some of the listeners are with me and didn't get too lost. And if they're with me or not, I'd still like to ask their questions, and I know producer Vern loves them, too. You can send us all your ideas. Our email is trivia@dlweekly.net.
We will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us. And we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.